What the f***?
No, it's okay. On this show, you can say fuck.
Usually when we come out of the open, I have some witty little remark to say about us saying fuck, but we just got some relatively bad news. Our friend and boss here at Jackalope, Todd Sheets, had a heart attack this week. So as we're recording this, we still don't know what's going on, but supposedly he's going to have bypass surgery and he's going to be okay. So, you know, we will wish Todd absolutely the best in this, don't we, Jillian?
Yes. Yeah, I was shocked when you told me that. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, her reaction was like, what?
Yeah, because he's, I forget how old he is, but I thought that anything like that would have come about.
Well, it's just one of them things. It's life. On that note, we have to segue into the Adam and Eve promo, which is not exactly a fun segue. So go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code WHAT to get 50% off of a single item, 3 free DVDs, a free mystery gift, and free shipping in the United States for using the promo code WHAT. Help Jillian and I out. I need to keep the lights on, and she needs a new Sailor Moon wallet.
No, they had those at the con.
Oh.
They didn't have enough storage space for all the shit that I have in, like, my wallet. I've got my Nintendo controller wallet.
Before we move into Dumbest Thing, would you like to tell us a little bit about what you did this last weekend?
I did. I went to Anime St. Louis, and Brad had a few panels, and I was on the snob panel. Cinema Snob, if this is your time listening, we're snobs. It's just our site. cinemasnob.com. And I also got to participate in Anime Password. So Doug Walker from That Guy with the Glasses and I were kind of the lead hosts, and the contestants would come in, and, you know, we just kind of had a blasty there. I cosplayed as Sailor Moon, and there were a few Sailor Moons there, and I had a lot of people stopping me to want to take my picture. And that's the first time that ever happened, because the very first con we went to, I didn't really have time to put anything together, so I just kind of bought some ears and went in my, you know, crazy little punky gothy wear.
You half-assed it, is what you're saying, last year.
No, because the first year we went, it was kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing, because Doug was going to be there, and he invited Brad to be on one of his panels, and I found out, like, less than a week beforehand, so I didn't really, you know, it was the first anime con I was going to. So when I got there, and a lot of people who dress up, well, not a lot, but a good group of them don't necessarily play, but there's a whole Tokyo Pop and anime wear where you've got like the big fuzzy legs or the steampunk wear with, you know, the tails of the goggles and the Victorian stuff. So there's a lot more than just specific game and anime cosplay. And then last year, I didn't really have, not necessarily the funds, but I didn't really know what to go as. And it takes a lot of research if you don't make it from scratch. So I went as Misa from Death Note. Which I still did research and, you know, bought it proper instead of just wearing like a black skirt and whatever. And I saw one year this girl wore clogs, and I'm like, really? Misa doesn't wear clogs. She wears like the lace up boots and things like that, which aren't hard to find. But I went all out with like the lace skirt, black corset top, and the lace legging, or not leggings, but thigh highs and arm warmers. So I was very authentic in that, but Misa is such, you know, a somewhat generic, easy to put together costume that I didn't really ever get stopped for pictures. And this year, like, everybody was stopped. And I will comment that I was the best Sailor Moon there. So I went all method with all the accessories and everything. So, and for those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about and hate anime, I'm sure that was incredibly boring, but I got a lot of bitchin' swag. So I was happy. And the panel went real well.
And you can go to cinemasnob.com to see the video of the panel as well.
Yes.
All right, now, Jillian, let's move into...
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
For this week, you sent me an article about the Arizona House passing a bill last week that requires every student at public college, regardless of economic status, to pay a minimum $2,000 tuition, even if they have a full-ride scholarship.
And guess which side of the political people started this bill?
I believe as we transitioned out last week, will we be talking about Republicans? And my comment was, if they do something dumb, and you go, so yes.
Well, this was actually, I sent it to you a while ago, and we just haven't had a chance to talk about it due to the whole massively horrible war on women crap. And I'd sent this back to you, I believe, like in February or early March. So it just kind of fit in since we'll be talking about other young issues and kids, and this is the older kids aspect of it. And it's just ridiculous. I mean, I can understand colleges kind of running out of the funding for some students because their, you know, economy is bad. However, then put a fucking cap on, you know, how many scholarships and just go as needed. Because to ask for $2,000 pay, I don't know how expensive Arizona State is, but I mean, that's a lot to ask if you can't afford college, because even, you know, if it's $200 a class, $300, you can at least take a few classes.
Maybe, God forbid, you take a little bit away from the sports end of things and put it towards education. God forbid a college actually, you know, takes a little bit away from their sporting department and put it into the educational department. Yeah, God forbid that happened. But the reason that this made the news even more than the stupidity that Jillian's talking about, the fact that Representative Michelle Ugenty, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Republican.
Ugenty or Ugenty.
Yes. She responded with, "Students, welcome to life." And I think her harsh,
fuck you
to the college students of Arizona is why this is getting the traction it's getting in the news. Really? Welcome to life. Yeah, life under Republicans. When they take everything away from you, and if you are not part of the 1%, go fuck yourself. That kind of life, that's what she wants.
I know. I mean, it's just ridiculous, because to ask someone to pay $2,000, you've got people, you know, 18-year-olds who live on their own, who don't have the best home situations, where, you know, mom and dad can't afford to send them to college. They're working, you know, full-time jobs or two jobs, two, three even, and are really committed to getting a college education. And unfortunately, in today's society, that's actually kind of rare. I mean, as many college students as there are, you've got people, a large percentage, that don't even want to finish high school and who are just like, fuck it, I'm done with school after high school. And here you are essentially punishing students who are really trying and want to get a college education. And I mean, I can understand needing constraints if it gets ridiculous where the school is losing funding, etc. But you've got people cutting art programs so that, you know, they have money to do sports programs. Very rare, if ever, see sports programs getting cut.
The sports programs always get preferential treatment. I've never understood that, Jay.
I know. And it's one of those, you know, I wasn't a big sports person. I didn't really go to any games. I'm just not, and I don't necessarily hate on them. You know, any extracurricular is great. Not to mention, though, that a lot of students who are in sports are complete douchebags. And I'm not saying everyone, but, you know, I went through college. I went through high school. There's a lot of sport douches out there, I'm not going to lie. And if you say there aren't, you are misinformed. So if you're a sports person and you weren't a douche, yay for you. But I am not saying all of them, but a large percentage. And so you've got, you know, teacher salary getting cut and other programs getting cut, which is just ridiculous. And you're cutting scholarships of students that want to make something of themselves and actually get a degree. I just don't understand having them pay $2,000 when, if they can't even afford to take a few classes, you know, essentially you're cutting scholarships, period, unless, you know, there's just someone who can, that's going for.
Well, and then there's two other aspects to what you just brought up, Jillian, because you hit it perfectly. But there's two things that the audience might not realize also go hand in hand with what Jillian said. One, the sports stuff. Guys, it's a game. Why, I don't understand the whole, we put all our money towards sports when people that actually can get an education to make the world a better place are second-class citizens. The big guy that catches the football, because, you know, he's a real man. I never got that shit.
It's not just fathers. Like, there's a lot of crazy sports parents out there. I mean, you've got moms getting in fights with referees and just screaming at the, you know, at the kids. And I mean, that's unfortunately the way the world is today. And I'll bet you thing, you know, if there was someone who was going on a sports scholarship that, you know, it doesn't say so, but I bet you there's going to be circumstances where they waive it and it's only going to be for sports people.
Right.
And I mean, I don't want to come off prejudiced against sports, but
I will.
I mean, it is like that. Well, no, I mean, it's not that I have anything against sports programs themselves, but it's the way that they're being run. I'm not saying eliminate sports programs, but I mean, how many stories have you heard where high school students are getting passing grades just, you know, so that they can cruise through on sports, because they do have you know, they do implement the whole, if you've got a D or you're failing, you know, you're off the sports team.
Academic requirements, I think, is what.
Yeah. And so you have certain teachers or certain principals that are just so obsessed with the sports, because the thing is, schools get donations based on how well their sports teams are doing, which is a crazy fact of life. Not that it's right or anything, but that's how it goes. So you've got education officials who will bend the rules so that their sports teams do well so they can get those donations. You know, you get a lot of sponsorship through sporting programs that they do allot some of it to other programs, but the bulk goes back into sports. So I don't agree with other programs like music and art getting completely cut and having everything go to sports. But, you know, I mean, that's kind of going off topic here.
But I also want to add, you also brought up the whole people don't have the money to pay the $2,000, right, Jillian?
Right.
Well, that stuff already comes back to haunt people. A friend of mine, who I won't name, lost out on a job when he tried to apply to go to the TSA. Now remember, this is the TSA that's groping us at the airports, that will hire anybody, including convicted felons, keep in mind, okay? You know why they wouldn't hire him? He still has outstanding student loans. Student loans stopping you from getting a job? Are you fucking serious? The whole point of a scholarship is you can't afford college otherwise. To go, it's going to cost you $2,000 no matter what. Welcome to life. You know what I'm telling these people? I want our listeners, especially those in Arizona, vote out Michelle Ugante next time she's up for election, and then send her a postcard when she's on the street. Go, welcome to life.
Well, it was also, I forget his first name, but Kavanaugh, and he was the one that kind of got this thing going, and I guess it was like the both of them at the hearing. So he's in on it, too. I don't know whether he's House or Senate. I just kind of have my, what I remember from the article. So, you know, it's House. Not just her, and sadly, it just makes me sick. I'm sorry. You've got these people trying to go to school. And I mean, I didn't have scholarships and I didn't have loans, but we weren't necessarily really well off. I mean, my mom, church lady, my dad was a cop. So it's not like we came from money. I was lucky enough for my parents to be able to afford for me to go to college, but I didn't go to some huge state university. I went to a community college for 2 years and then the college here in Springfield, which wasn't necessarily cheap, but it did help going to community college. But I didn't go off and spend money in a dorm or anything like that. So you do have people who want to go to this university who may, you know, very well need dorms. And that's, you know, that's another, it's essentially dorms are a little more than apartments sometimes. So it's just really ridiculous that they're saying a minimum everybody has to pay $2,000. And it's not like people are getting scholarships who are just like, oh, well, I don't want to pay for college. It's ridiculous. And I'll have to, you know, get a job, blah, blah, blah. It's like they, you know, I did try and apply for assistance and we didn't qualify. And that's with, you know, my dad being a fucking cop and my mom a church lady, which isn't the best paying professions. I mean, like I said, I mean, I don't poverty or anything like that, but they're not exactly, you know, extremely well paying professions. So, you know, I didn't get approved for any kind of funding because of, you know, what they make. And, you know, my parents had three kids. I came with two siblings. So, you know, if you look at that, you've got people who are unfortunately a lot less well off that are not going to be able to go to college and pay this $2,000 a year.
Right. And it is, as Jillian said, Representative John Kavanaugh, Republican, and Representative Michelle Ugante, Republican, that are for this bill, which is HB 2675. And of course, the Democrats are against the bill. And this is the other thing I don't get, Jillian. What does this gain? I mean, are they getting a kickback? Because you know the Republicans don't do anything without some kind of a kickback or some sort of, mm-hmm. you know, they're coming out ahead in some way. So is it that Arizona State is giving them a kickback saying we can't afford it? No. You know why? Because the scholarship would cover it. It doesn't make a difference to the school. Somebody yeah. in here is getting a kickback. Somebody between the school and these I'm going to say it, corrupt representatives. There's a third party that's looking to profit out of this.
Yeah, I'd almost wonder if maybe they went to that school or have some affiliation with that school where, you know, I mean, this is way out there. I mean, there's no documentation of it. It would just be an interesting situation if it was like, oh, we'll have to cut sports and things like that, and they're huge sports nuts or something like that. Like, one was a cheerleader and be like, what? No, you're not cutting sports. I watch your shows every time. It's just like, that would be, it's a good idea for like a little, one of those little Lifetime movies of corruption going on. But I have no idea what the motivation for this would even be.
So I'm saying to our audience, if you're in Arizona, vote out Representative John Kavanaugh and Representative Michelle Ugandi and tell them welcome to life, and then tell them to go fuck themselves. And that's probably the longest, dumbest thing we've ever done. Why don't we take a break and we'll come back and do the actual topic after heart attack? How about we do that, Jay?
Sure.
So, dumbest thing turned into the whole segment.
I can't believe
that
was a whole segment. It didn't even seem like we were talking that long.
When you get you and I together, that shit can happen.
Well, at least we didn't go on like too horribly off tangents. We just went on a little bit with the sports programs, but
no, that's still related.
Well, it's a semi tangent.
All right,
semi.
Jillian and I'll be back after a heart attack.
Because of the grisly subject matter presented in the motion picture, The Gates of Hell, no person under 17 years of age will be admitted to the theater unless they are accompanied by a parent or certified adult guardian. The Gates of Hell will be shown in its uncut version, and some people may find certain scenes shocking. Again, we repeat, no one under 17 years of age will be admitted to The Gates of Hell unless they are accompanied by a parent or certified adult guardian.
All right, and I'm here with another heart attack with Hart Fisher, huh, Hart?
Yeah, it looks like it's a heart attack, and it sounds like, I guess I gave Todd, our owner of Jackalope Radio, a little heart attack, Boneyard Books, a couple weeks ago, and I'm really sorry about that, Todd. I hope you feel a lot better.
We hope Todd feels a lot better. And the segment is not named Heart Attack for any reason other than your name is Heart and you attack.
Yeah, and I'm kind of aggressive.
Just a little bit.
Are we going to talk about today here? Today, I want to talk about 50 Shades of Grey. I don't know how many people have heard about this new book series, but it's called 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James, and they're calling it mommy porn.
I looked this up a little bit. Didn't this start off as a Twilight ripoff of all things?
Yeah, that's the funny thing about it, is there's this whole subculture of erotica based on actual TV franchises. Like, I know there's a whole bunch of gay Kirk and Spock and love short stories, and I know that people have written pornographic erotica about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Pretty much any show that has a fan doing kind of has subculture writing about it. So Twilight had it, and it morphed into this. It's a book about Rachel, a 39-year-old mother and lawyer from New Jersey who specializes in medical malpractice. And she often asks intimate questions about obstetrical cases. But scenes from the new erotic trilogy, 50 Shades of Grey, blew her away. This is a mom, that this is a real person, Rachel. She's blown away by this S&M stuff. But to me, it's nothing new, obviously. I mean, I got married by a dominatrix. I've definitely had an interest in S&M and fetish culture, and I've written my fair share of S&M material. I've shot fetish films for clubs, like underground clubs, like the Fetish Asylum. So to me, this world is like nothing new, and I'm kind of cracking up that all of a sudden this book series about an S&M relationship between a rich dude and a regular girl, Anastasia Steele, who's 21 and a virginal college student, can't say no, flashing 27-year-old Christian Grey, who she insists she signed a contract that allows him to submit her to his every sadomasochistic whim. And this thing is a huge hit that has spawned it's a number one New York Times bestseller, and they're talking about making this into a movie.
So do you think this is moving S&M into the mainstream culture, or do you think this is more of a fluke? Because I'll admit, until you pointed this out to me, I'd never heard of this before yesterday. And when I looked it up, you're right. This thing is huge.
I don't think the audience is us. And in my mind, it's very much like 9.5 Weeks, you know, that movie that came out with Mickey Rourke and, God, what was her name, that hot blonde chick?
Was that Natasha Kinski?
No, not Natasha Kinski. Kim Basinger. And it was an S&M relationship, and everybody said all the same shit they're saying now. about why this is so hot. And it's the funny thing is people are shocked that these are like all of this. These are housewives that are into this S&M erotica and are confused by it.
So what is it like? Is it like actual hardcore stuff or more like Harlequin romance stuff? Or is it like, you know, Penthouse Letters kind of stuff?
It's a little of both. You know, it's a little of both. I haven't read it myself. I'm mostly interested in the phenomenon of it and the idea that the culture's puzzled by why are women into this? And I'm laughing my ass off because to me it's plain as day. I believe that all these women are into this book and it's such a huge hitch because the women in America are not satisfied with the modern castrated American male. Because I believe the man in this country has become disposable and has viewed mockingly up and down and has been completely castrated. And you could see it in the culture.
Well, and then it even goes back, and I know I'm quoting a movie character here, but as Tyler Durden said, we're a nation of men raised by women. Is another woman what we really need? From Fight Club, Chuck Palahniuk's brilliant book.
Yeah, you know, that's something that could be said about myself. You know, I'm a child of divorce. And I was raised by my mother. I was spent more of my time with her. I did get to have a relationship with my father on the weekends, which was great. He was a big part of my life. I had a great dad. You know, I had a great mom. I'm pretty lucky. But it's funny to me that these people are confused about why would women be into this S&M relationship? And I think that a lot of women, and I'm not saying they want someone to order them around all day, but I do believe that men got to regrow their goddamn balls. And I think this book, 50 Shades of Grey, illustrates exactly what I'm talking about. You don't excite a woman by asking her, can I eat your pussy now? Is it okay if I eat it now? A girl doesn't want to be asked. You know, I mean, it's a weird thing that the relationship of man and woman strained. And I'm not advocating like, oh, go get her like a caveman. that's not true either, but goddamn it. Be more of a fucking man. I mean, stand up for yourself. Fucking, it's everything that we talk about on this show is what I mean when I say we need more men that are, take responsibility for their actions, men that say no to the media, men that say no to insane arguments, this notion of what they want from, you can't win. You could be this satanic motorcycle riding dude, Jesse James, and he gets the girl next door. But as soon as he gets caught banging a stripper, with tattoos, there was, oh, how can you do that? What the fuck did you think Jesse James was? This guy used to be a bodyguard to fucking Slayer and fucking Danzig, and you're all weirded out that he's banging strippers? Are you fucking kidding me? And then you're going to castrate him for being who he is? This is what I'm talking about. This is why I believe 50 Shades of Grey is so popular.
Well, and it also goes the other way. I know quite a few men that have, I guess the only way I can put it is a castrating bitch fetish. I've never understood that myself.
I don't get it, but you know, I'm seeing it in the culture like crazy, especially with like, let's say a movie like The Sitter, the comedy, The Sitter, and you've got your fat, intersexual white male who goes to a chick's house and he's the booty call, shows up in the middle of the night, eats her vagina, doesn't get a fucking reach around in return, gets sent out on his ass. He's not even worthy. He's just there to go and eat her vagina. And the big moment for him at the end of the movie is when he finally says, you know, fuck you, I'm not going to deal with that. Who the hell wants to fantasize about being that guy? What girl in the audience wants to fuck that weak, fat fuck? I had this conversation with somebody at a movie meeting last week in which I said, okay, you got Michael Cera, and he's in this Scott Pilgrim film. He's a weak, ineffectual fucking Woody Allen motherfucker. The girl didn't want to fuck him at the beginning of the movie. The girl doesn't care about the story arc and being a skinny little fag who's always apologizing and kissing ass and stuttering constantly. She's not going to want to fuck him by the end of the movie either. And this is what I'm seeing in our culture, and it's really bothering me. And I think that women are responding by consuming 50 Shades of Grey, where you've got sure, it's an S&M book, but it's a strong man who makes decisions, who's not apologetic for what he fucking wants.
Well,
I think that's a big thing.
It even goes back to the 80s. Remember that whole Alan Alda, sensitive man, wearing the guys with the perm bullshit that happened in the 80s, Hart?
Dude, I think we're there. I think we've seen the result of it. I think that's part of the appeal of the UFC in a lot of this extreme sports material. I believe that men are trying to prove their manhood and destroying their bodies to prove their manhood because they don't know how to be a man. They don't know how to prove they're a man. So they're going to skateboard over 13 steps and fracture their pelvis. But you know what? That's not really manly. That's kind of a pussy. I view self-destruction as pussy time. You're going to self-destruct. That's not manly. That's not strong. That's weak energy. When you lash out at yourself, that's a very weak, ineffectual energy. And I believe that we need to get back to a real, you know, a much more get out of this mommy nanny society where something goes wrong, I got to call somebody for help for everything and anything. Somebody bullies my kid at school, I got to call the principal. Whatever happened to teaching your son how to fight for himself? Whatever happened to taking your boy in the backyard and putting some boxing gloves on the kid and teaching him how to fucking stand up for himself?
To a degree, there are some parents that instead of teaching them to stand up for themselves, they teach them to be the aggressor and the bully. And I disagree with that, but I agree with standing up for yourself if you're the victim.
You know, my martial arts school, when I went and first started my training, the head instructor was very, very careful about saying, hey, look, you know, you're being taught and you be responsible with what I teach you. This is not for you to be Mr. Tough Guy. This is here for your self-defense. And you're supposed to do the right thing. And that's a moralistic part of the society. And that's kind of what I'm talking about here. I'm a big dude. That doesn't mean I run around picking on chicks. My wife is Japanese. And part of the reason that she moved to America is she feels that men in Japan have been completely feminized. They're all wearing makeup. They've all been metrosexualized. They all got dippity-doo in their fucking hair so you can't run your fingers through the hair. You know, she came to America to get a real man. And she got me a crazy wild-eyed Viking. And she loves it, you know. And part of the thing that makes our relationship work is she knows that I'm listening to her. You know, when I'm saying you're a strong man, part of strength is being able to admit when you're wrong. Part of strength is being able to listen to your girl honestly. Even if you look like an idiot, you got to admit your weaknesses when you were wrong. And then also stand up for when you're right. Don't back down when you're fucking right. And that's kind of where I'm getting at with this 50 Shades of Grey. I just keep seeing this nonstop castration of the American male and then this puzzlement of why is 50 Shades of Grey so popular? I don't understand.
My thing is, if it started off as a Twilight ripoff, it's probably not all that well written on a technical sense. And that's the thing that bothered me the most about Twilight, not its popularity, that a book that badly written got that popular. That's what bothers me a little bit.
Well, I think it's funny that this started as a Twilight ripoff because that's how I view the Hunger Games. You know, I like the Hunger Games a lot better when it was called Battle Royale. I mean, sure, it's made a lot of money, and I'm sure the kids all love it, but it matters to me. I liked Battle Royale. I thought it was an amazing film, and it, too, was based on a book series. And I'd be confused why no one's not pissed off in Japan. The owners of Battle Royale, I'm surprised they're not. These guys' asses off when all this money is at stake.
And Hart, if you want to talk about real non-feminized TV, man TV, there's American Horrors for them to go to, isn't there?
That's true, guys. If you want to see what a man likes to fucking watch, tune into American Horrors. We're 24 hours, 7 days a week, and true crime. We've got all kinds of cool stuff going on. And starting next week on Heart Attack, we're going to be doing a contest segment. So we're going to be asking you questions about some of the American Horrors programming, and I'm going to be giving away rare collectible Boneyard Press comic books and also exclusive T-shirts that are made exclusively just for this giveaway. So check out www.filmon.com to get your subscription to American Horrors or download the app. Otherwise, catch me next week on Heart Attack.
Awesome. Say goodnight, Hart.
Good night, Gracie.
Just when you thought it was safe to look at the calendar again, comes Saturday the 14th. The year's number one horror comedy spoof. Richard Benjamin and Paul Prentice inherit a spooky old house and drive the local vampires bats. If you thought it was bad on Friday the 13th, get ready for Saturday the 14th. Your chance to laugh at everything that ever scared you. Rated PG, parental guidance suggested. Oh.
All right, Jillian. Now, the next two things we're going to talk about, it's kind of two topics, but they're tied together because it involves very young kids. Well, Jillian, I sent you an article about a Fairfax County school in Georgia that actually had a six-year-old, a little girl named Salacia Johnson, arrested, put in handcuffs, and brought to the police station for throwing a temper tantrum in school. Did the school overreact? Just a little bit, I think. In this one, I am not against the cops. Didn't do anything wrong. The cops, from the tone of the article, didn't really want to do this either. The cops were sort of like, really?
Let it be said that, I mean, it's not like they had a choice not to handcuff her. It's their rules. Like, they can't go against it. Anything where they have to arrest somebody, they have to put them in handcuffs, no matter how young. So they were just going by protocol because, you know, I'm the same way. If I had some, like, stupid stipulation, I'm not going to fucking lose my job, unfortunately.
Right.
So let's just get that out there. If any of you are thinking, well, they could have taken her away, not handcuffed her. So, I mean, I don't know what the rules are. If somebody, you know, says they're pressing charges, you kind of have to take them in if the, you know, complaining person says so. And I know, Josh, you had told me that, you know, there wasn't any kind of injury or something, but it did say that she threw a bookshelf, which obviously couldn't have been that heavy because she's six, unless she's like the Hulk or something.
The picture they show, no, she's not a big girl.
No, I know, I'm joking. But she threw a bookshelf that I guess hit her principal's leg. So that probably pissed him or her off. Probably got like a scrape or something. I doubt it was broken. Obviously, the shelf was not that big if a six-year-old, you know, picked it up, unless she was like on angel dust or something and had like super strength. So, but not that that's an excuse. I'm just saying, you know, that's the only reasoning they maybe could have been like, I want her arrested for assault. I just wanted to clarify that that's how that whole thing got into actually taking her away versus, dude, there's nothing here.
But my whole point of bringing this up is not, was the little girl wrong? Obviously she was wrong for throwing a temper tantrum and throwing the shelf at the teacher or the principal.
Yeah.
There's no debate in that. The little girl threw a tantrum. But have we really gotten to the point in this country, Jay, where a temper tantrum and having a little six-year-old throw something non-lethal or non-really even threatening at you is enough to call? I mean, can you imagine what the principal said to the police dispatcher?
She threw a shelf at me.
A six-year-old threw a shelf at me. You come and take her away right now.
Now, I do want to say, I mean, like I said, I think this is ridiculous, but I'm one of those people, I like to play devil's advocate.
You're really good at that, too.
I am, because I'm evil. Ah, la, la, la. Books, so I assume ripping out the pages, throwing books, throwing things. So I almost wonder if maybe they were getting close, like she was throwing them at students and not hitting them, and maybe they called the parents and they couldn't get a hold of them, couldn't pick them up. They couldn't really, you know, legally restrain her because then they could get charges against them. So there may be more to it to where they had to call someone to come get her if they couldn't get the parents, because like I said, the article doesn't go that deeply into exactly what happened. So I'm wondering if maybe, you know, because they said they're not charging her, you know, they had to take her in handcuffs because that was their protocol. And then of course they would have reason if the principal's like, you know, she threw this at me, I want her taken away. So that would be the only thing that I can see for reasoning of calling the cops, is if, you know, they could not get a hold of her parents, or her parents were just like, I don't give a fuck. Because again, I know I've said this multiple times, I've worked at a school, I know what you can and cannot do with kids, because then you can get in trouble. I've known of many uncaring parents who just didn't give a shit when their kids actually hurt other kids and got into huge fights. And I'm talking young, like first grade, second grade. Not that all parents are like that, but they are out there. And like I said, I'm not in support of this story, but it's just kind of interesting. I wonder how in depth and how the situation, you know, actually went. And that's the only way I can plausibly see them calling the cops to get this girl, because you cannot restrain a child. They say essentially, like, when I was at the school, you could, you know, take a child and you kind of, you know, cross their hands and kind of hold them to calm them down that way, to where, you know, obviously if they're hitting you, like I said, when I was working in a school, there was this first or second grader, I know she wasn't older than second grade, who took her belt off that she was wearing and was beating another kid down. And I had to kind of, you know, pull her off of him and, you know, yell for a teacher, because I also did playground supervision. And, you know, I kind of, you know, held her gently and was holding her, you know, hands, and I had to essentially carry her away because she was just kicking, screaming. She scratched the shit out of my arms. Like, I still have, you know, very minute scars. Like, she broke the skin and, like, I was bleeding. That's how severe it was.
I think that thing you're talking about where you cross their arms is called a soft restraint.
I think that's what that's called. Yeah, but I mean, that's the least you can do. So I'm wondering, like, that's the most you can do. So I'm wondering if, I mean, obviously, if this child is going batshit insane tantrum, I mean, we're not talking on the floor, like, well, like pounding her hands and legs on the floor. I mean, she's ripping up books, throwing a bookshelf. So again, you know, yeah, she's six, but at the same time, you know, obviously get everybody out of the classroom. But if, you know, if nobody's there to pick her up or they can't get a hold of the parents, that's kind of the only thing you can do.
Do you know what this made me think of? I am going to kill the fuck out of all of you. It made me think of that chick from a couple of weeks ago that flipped
out.
Yeah,
the college student.
Yeah, it just made me think of maybe this is her little sister. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and then it kind of makes you wonder too, like, I mean, obviously she probably doesn't have the greatest parenting consequences, because usually kids who have consequences at home don't react in such a severe way. I don't know. I just think that maybe there was a chain of events that aren't being told, because of course, yeah, articles like to sensationalize. And so if it's kind of evened out, I mean, that would be the only logical steps that I can see for them calling the cops. Because obviously if they were like, hey, you need to calm down, you know, we're calling your parents, etc., it doesn't sound like the parents were even called at all.
Well, and then you also got to realize this is a fallout of the zero tolerance policies that were instituted in the 90s and the late 90s after all those school shootings. Most schools.
Okay, no. Hold on. Let me stop with the zero tolerance. Yes, there's extremes. And yes, I can kind of understand. With zero tolerance, it doesn't necessarily mean calling the cops for every little thing. Zero tolerance is essentially you do a violent act and you get either suspended or you get fucking expelled. The article also talked about, like, it was bashing zero tolerance to almost a severe degree. It was saying that, you know, this proves that the zero tolerance rule is going, you know, way out of bounds, as a, you know, student was suspended and later committed suicide, which proves that this rule is, you know, ridiculous. It's like, they were probably suspended, maybe rightfully so. Secondly, the school is not responsible if a kid is so freaked out that they got suspended, they fucking kill themselves. I mean, there has to be more there. You can't say something like that for sensational and not give the details.
But
you know?
I don't like zero tolerance policies no matter what. I mean, the violence ones I can understand a little more. But, like, you know, there are the zero tolerance drug policies where I can't remember what state, a girl had to give her epilepsy medication to the front office because she was not allowed to walk around with her bottle of pills. But the problem is, when her epilepsy kicked in, she needed a pill within a minute, rather than having to have someone run to the office, unlock it from the safe, run back to the room, which is a 4 to 5 minute thing. It's like, they're epilepsy pills. She's not dealing.
They have to do the same with EpiPens, though.
Yeah, that to me, that kind of zero tolerance is ridiculous. I think zero tolerance is dumb across the board. It should be, there are certain things that should be exceptions to the rules.
EpiPens, it's the same thing with severity of an allergic reaction. However, I can kind of see that, because that can be used as a weapon. Also, you know, you have
long fingernails can be used as a weapon. Anything can be used
Have rules on how long your fingernails can be too.
Are you fucking serious? Keep in mind, I haven't been in school since 93, so
telling you what happened to my arm? Do you remember me just telling you what happened to my arm? Like, she scratched the fucking shit out of me because she had long fingernails. So that I can understand. Like, I mean, depending on the age, if you have, you know, these kids doing this severe, I mean, she fucking took, like I said, I'm not saying that I agree that this situation was right. I don't think kids should be taken away in handcuffs or anything like that. But I mean, kids are, I'm almost afraid to bring a kid into this world because kids are just going batshit insane. I mean, a first grader taking off their belt and beating the shit out of another kid, you know, and then the parents came in. I didn't even tell you this part. The parents came in and were just nonchalant, didn't give a shit.
See, that's the parents' problem. That's not society in general. That is bad parenting.
But it also becomes a school's problem when the kids are doing this. You can't have kids doing this to other kids.
And I agree with that.
You've got kids going into fights and then the parents being like, well, he shoved him first. And it's like third grade. It's like you come get an adult and the parents are like, I'm not raising a tattletale. You know, your parents raising their kids, if someone messes with you, you throw punches, you know, and I understand obviously in high school and maybe even junior high, seventh and eighth grade, where fights will break out because another kid fucking punches someone first. Yeah, you're not going to go run and tell an adult, but you've got kids like literally, you know, shoving, be like, get away from me. And then the other kid's throwing punches because the other kid shoved them away because whatever reason.
Right.
So you've got severe reactions being ingrained into these kids for non-severe, you know, startings and instances.
Exactly.
And it's approved by the parents. You know, I've got friends that are like, what's how I'm raising my kid? You know, if anything starts, you fucking deck them. And I'm like, are you fucking serious? You know,
yeah,
and
but
it's
there
like,
has
if
to
that's
be a degree.
What you want to raise them for, like on the street or whatever, just day to day. But if the school has these rules, don't get pissed that your kid gets suspended because they're throwing punches, because you know the rules in the school. And if that's how you want to teach your kid, fine. But their ass is going to spend it.
Well, now let's move on to our other kid thing. You sent me this article, which I've been putting off, not to be a jerk, just because I kept thinking we had more pressing stories, because this story right. isn't really a pressing one. I'm not trying to minimalize your input into the show,
no,
Jay.
I don't care. I was just, you know, it's a non time-sensitive manner. It's not like something that's, you know, a huge being implemented and is, you know, crazy. It's just another society, really. So this actually could have fit into dumbest thing as well. But
well, then why don't you
the
tell
same
us?
Way with youths. I'm sorry.
Then why don't you tell us what is going on? Since you sent me the story, you can describe it there, Jay.
I want to know.
Okay, fine.
Essentially, we're talking stripper pole lessons for guess how young of age. I'm just going to give you.
I already know.
No, not you. I'm talking to the listeners.
Oh, okay.
As young as 3 years old. I'm not shitting you. 3 years old. I'm not saying that, you know, oh, it gives them self-confidence and exercise. It's like your three-year-old doesn't need stripper pole lessons for exercise. Give them a ball and stick them in the yard. And
buy a big wheel.
The interesting thing with this is the kids in the pictures of this article, their faces were blurred. So clearly, you parents who are putting your kids in these, you know, lessons and be like, there's nothing wrong with it. You obviously see something wrong with it because you're not letting your kid's picture be shown to where, you know, normally you have school functions, things like that. And you're like, my baby's in the paper. Look. And so clearly you're not as okay with this as you are saying. And there was even a little excerpt that said kids want to imitate, you know, their moms on the poles. It's like, ah, that's nice. Your kid knows you take off your clothes.
For money.
That was implied. In one of the pictures, the kid, she was a little older than five. I would say she's between 7 and maybe 9. It's kind of hard to tell these days. But she was wearing, you know, shorty shorts and essentially a small sports bra looking top. So, yeah, and she was working the moves on the poles. And like I said before, you know, worked at a school and there were kids, you know, first and second grade who were doing the drop it like it's hot and grinding on the poles of the playground equipment, like the monkey bars and stuff. And I mean, it got to the point where it was a regular daily thing. I had to, you know, blow the whistle and tell them to, you know, knock it off because it was inappropriate. And I mean, if you think that's extreme, I mean, you know, we had the same rules for kids who were kissing other kids and things like that. And it's like, I mean, high school is fucking PDA things, but little kids don't need to be kissing other little kids, especially when it was like the girls chasing boys and the boys didn't like it, obviously.
Well, see, to me, the problem with when you sent me this, the very first thing that I thought of was, why does our society feel it has to sexualize children? Sexualizing children is not a good thing. That's a bad thing. And like you were saying about the grinding and stuff, kids that young shouldn't know what this is. They should not know.
TV's raised their kids and they're watching fucking MTV and they got, you know,
oh, please,
I mean,
MTV hasn't been relevant in years.
I think it's called Kids Pop or Kids Zone or something like that. And they take popular songs and then they, you know, revamp it to kids, you know, singing these songs, and they somewhat change like the lyrics. It's essentially like, you know, the family version of Home Alone, if you will, but it's like, you know what, your kids know those songs. They're not going to listen to the fucking kids pop version. They're going to listen to the actual songs, and you know it. And, you know, these kids know who these people are, and they emulate them, you know, just as anything. If you show your kids young movies, you know, you've got Stop the Video Games, you know, the gunplay and things like that. And, you know, they pick up language, and you've got parents who, oddly enough, are very protective over what their kids are exposed to, yet they're dropping the F-bomb around them and cussing, and then surprised when they get in trouble at school.
Well, and then it also comes down to, what do the moms that take their kids to these class, what do they expect to happen? That by the time she gets to middle school, she's going to be a giant cum dumpster because she's been raised since the age of 3 to show your body off for the boys? She's going to be a fucking cum dumpster. That's what she's going to wind up being. She's going to be the easiest piece of tang in the neighborhood.
Yeah, and apparently this is being done in a place that's made very kind of glamour, as with, like, you know, sparklies and glitter, and then there's like pictures of essentially burlesque women and very scantily clad clothing. But, you know, speaking society wise you look at, you know, the kids, Abercrombie and Fitch, you look at Toddlers in Tiaras, Dance Moms, all of this stuff that is very adult based things for kids. And I knew a girl at one time, I'm not friends with her anymore, but she was a pageant girl when she was younger. She was fucked up. Like, it fucked her up royally. You know, she didn't have fun. She was pushed to do it. And the stuff these moms put their kids through, it's just, it's insane. It's really, it should be child abuse, but society says it's okay. And, you know, there's these things.
Society shouldn't. My whole point
is, that's the world we live in.
And I'm sorry if I sound like a grumpy old man who's ultra conservative on this issue. There should be an age of innocence. I mean, obviously, each person, each girl is going to, you know, get her boobs at a different age. She's going to get her period at a different age. Mm-hmm. Until that happens, I consider them innocent. Why can't they have an age of innocence anymore? Why?
Like the thing with the baby diets and everything like that. Like, these parents are just so obsessed with, you know, how their kids
pushing
are
their own insecurities upon their children. It's sickening. It's just sickening, Jay.
It is. And like I said, you know, I mean, I've mentioned before on the show the differences between how Brad and I were raised, my husband Brad. And he was exposed to things he watched when he was younger that I was like, really? And I mean, granted, like I've said before, again, I wasn't, you know, allowed to watch the fucking Simpsons till I was 13. Not that I agree that, you know, to that extreme, but there's certain things like, you know, horror movies and movies with sex scenes and things like that, that I wouldn't want my kids to watch at that young age. So I'm sure if Brad and I do ever have kids, we're going to have the quite a bit of strife in how we raise them.
You will. Jillian, speaking of your husband, Brad, don't you like do stuff on his website?
Don't define me. I'm not in his shadow. But yes, I do. I do a lot of production work. We're making independence films, and I am on thecinemasnob.com. And there is wifesploitation, speaking of all this sexualizing. So I've got some characters on there. It's essentially reviewing exploitation films in comedic ways was his main show, and we've got a lot of fun stuff on there if you want to check it out. As for, you know, spin-off shows with we've got a sitcom called 80s Dan, where it's essentially he gets transported from the 80s to present day and shenanigans ensue with the laugh track, and
he does a show with me too on this very network.
He does.
Radiodrome, yes. Where can people find JZJ other than the cinemasnob.com?
I'm on Twitter as Mrs. JZ Jones, Facebook, Jillian Zarowski Jones, or you can just type in Jillian Jones and it'll be on there. And I'm here on this show every week talking to you people.
Where whenever you're not here, you're missed. That's the problem.
I am. I'm very uber busy. No, I look forward to doing this show every week. So hopefully we inform and entertain and I don't get too boring or preachy or annoying. Or anything else.
Oh, trust me, I'll hit that long before you do. And you can find me at 1201beyond.com, 1201beyond@gmail.com. I have my weekly column, Sanity is Razor Thin, at geekjuicemedia.com. And I have a new monthly column in Scene Magazine. It's a local Green Bay paper, Scene, S-C-E-N-E, magazine.com. I believe it's .com. It will be starting in the May issue. My column is called The Shadows of Pop Culture. I'm going to say good night.
Good night.
With a broken nose and a fucked up knee, Well, maybe this cowboy's angels ain't for me. Cowboy, look at the way.